Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hey there, welcome to The Dr. Nina Show here on LA Talk Radio. I am your host, Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, and I am here to help you stop counting calories, carbs, and fat grams so you can easily get to a healthy weight and get on with your life. How amazing to wake up and just think about your day, not your diet. That's what it's all about. We want to help you think about other things besides what you weigh and what size jeans you wear. If you want to join me in the studio, the number here is 818-602-4929. Again, you can call in 818-602-4929. I would love to hear what is on your mind, what is weighing on you. Because the real problem with binge eating, stress eating, and compulsive eating is not food. The real problem is what is eating at you. So I have a Facebook group, Dr. Nina's Food for Thought Community. You can join it, by the way, if you're not a member. Just go on Facebook and ask to join Dr. Nina's Food for Thought Community. I posted a question, and it's this. What do you wish other people could understand about your struggles with food? What do you wish other people could understand about your struggles with food? And I got some answers. I'm going to share them with you. I'm not going to tell you who said what, but I'm going to share some of the answers. And if you would like to share your own thoughts about what other people you wish other people could understand about your struggles with food, please give me a call, 818-602-4929. One person said, I wish people could understand that sometimes I just choose not to make the best food choices. Sometimes I might choose to have a piece of pie in a restaurant, and I don't need anyone to make comments on it. I don't need people to say, do you really need that? Do you really think you should have that? No, I'm a grown woman, and I can figure out what I want to eat or not eat. I don't need your help. And she also says that sometimes people purposely don't offer her things. Like they'll say, cake. They'll go to her, skip, cake. And she said it makes her angry and just makes her want to eat it more. Who can relate? And I said that the idea of people not offering you something is especially just poignant and painful. There's nothing you shouldn't have, by the way. When you give yourself permission to have whatever you want, you might want less of what you think that you're going to binge on. If I say, well, you can't have XYZ, guess what? That is XYZ is all you're going to want to have, because the experience or anticipation of deprivation just makes you want something more. Someone else said, I wish people would understand this is not just a matter of saying no or eating less. They see nothing wrong with starving themselves, eating once a day or eating snacks all day instead of a meal, but they got something to say to me. I think the first part of that is especially important. It's not just willpower. It is not about willpower. It's not about control. It is about something psychological. Willpower is logical. Oh, you want to lose weight? Well, just don't eat so much. Well, that's logical. But the reason we turn to food is not logical. It is psychological. And so really understanding the psychology, the hidden things that make you turn to food is so vitally important. Someone else says, yeah, when people just say, oh, just eat everything in moderation. I can't do that. I have never found the way to eat in moderation, right? It's hard to eat in moderation when you're also getting the message of you shouldn't eat that, et cetera. And here's one. This is such a good point. I was like, oh, such an awesome point. He says, I wish people would understand it is not about willpower. It is not a lack of willpower. It's a massive amount of willpower to not binge every day. Such a good point. And I said, yes, it does indeed take massive amounts of willpower not to binge every day. But the problem is not willpower, obviously. But when you identify and process why you want to binge, you'll binge less and eventually not at all. In fact, it could be something you don't even think about ever. And I actually made a Facebook Live video earlier in the week about this very thing, about the process of change. So if you didn't happen to see my Facebook Live video, don't worry. I am going to tell you the process of change, which I've talked about before. But basically, the process of change is this. People say, I have no willpower. I'm a food addict. I have no control over food. That's my problem. And then they realize, oh, actually something's eating at them and they're using food for a reason. The next step is they eat whatever, and afterwards they say, oh, now I get it. I get why I ate that. I didn't even realize it at the time. It was totally unconscious, but now I see. And the next step is, I know why I want to eat that. I know I'm upset. I know I'm in conflict about this or whatever. I know what I'm feeling or what I'm thinking. I know I am eating for escape or comfort, but heck, I'm going to do it anyway. Sometimes they don't say heck. Sometimes they use stronger words. That is what I usually do, but I'm being appropriate. Okay. I know why I want to eat, but I'm going to do it anyway. The next step is, I know why I want to eat that, but I'm going to make a different choice. I'm going to respond to myself. I'm going to comfort myself. I'm going to relate to myself in a different way instead of using food to escape and comfort or punish or whatever. There's so many reasons that people use food. So many reasons other than simply emotional eating. Oh, a caller. Hi, Nicole. Welcome to the show.
Good morning. Thank you.
Good morning. I was getting all carried away and I almost didn't see your call, but I'm glad that I did.
Okay.
How are you doing?
I'm glad too. I'm okay. So I have a question today because I feel like it's something like I'm becoming more aware of what's eating at me and not what I'm eating. But I've noticed that I know that something's eating at me, but I still end up eating. So I don't know what to do when I feel a certain emotion. So
right.
Like last night, I was like doing my thing and then my dad said something to me and it made me all like nervous and anxious and like, oh my God, and I have to deal with him. It's like 11 o'clock. He wants to quote unquote chit chat right now at 11 o'clock. Like, what the hell does he want to tell me? Does he want to talk about work? Does he want to talk about dating? Like whatever. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, I was eating at me and then I ended up eating. But like, I knew that it wasn't from hunger, but it was really from...
What were you eating? So we also know from the food mood formula that what you actually choose to eat can give a clue as to what you are feeling. So what is it that you chose to eat?
I chose to eat lentil soup.
Okay.
And also like fruit, like peach and lentil soup. I mean, not the worst things ever, but like why? I wasn't hungry. It was like 11 something.
Okay, but so that would fall into... Maybe not my food mood formula, but I think that you wanted something warm and filling, right? That maybe you felt some emptiness. There's something that you were using the lentil soup to feel the warmth and you're using the peach to feel sweetness. So if we translate what the foods were into emotional needs, it's that. Or maybe you were trying to get your attention away from what's my dad talking to me at 11 o'clock at night? I don't want to talk at 11 o'clock at night to focus on, oh, how could I have eaten soup and a peach at 11 o'clock at night? Now I'm going to gain weight, right? You could be just using it as a distraction from some thoughts you did not want to have towards your dad.
True. That resonates. Okay, so next time when I that all makes sense, and I think you're totally spot on, but next time that happens, what do I do? Like, what in that moment, I'm anxious, he says something to me, I feel anxious, I feel, you know, I feel uneasy, I'm like, oh my God, so annoyed, what does he want to talk about, and then what do I do?
Okay, and well, two things.
Instead of going to the food, what should I do in that moment?
Okay, what should you do? So, two things. One is, I noticed that you appeared to feel as if you had no choice in the matter. Dad wants to talk to you at 11 o'clock at night. It doesn't sound like you wanted to talk to Dad at 11 o'clock at night, but it sounded as if you felt that you had no choice.
it was kind of like I knew, like, I, after he said, let's chit chat for 2-3 minutes, I was curious as to what he wanted to chit chat about. And it was kind of like, let me just get this over with now.
Okay.
So I kind of like did my eating thing and then went to his room, my parents' room. And I was like, Dad, what did you want to chit chat about?
Oh, so you did it before. Okay. You did it before.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sorry, I left that part out.
So, right. So maybe you sort of had to fill yourself up before you went in there to hear what he had wanted to chit chat. It sort of sounds ominous, like, we need to talk. Right. We need to talk is never followed by anything good. And maybe we need to chit chat, same thing. Okay. So here's what you do. Remember the VARE acronym, validate, acknowledge, reassure yourself. So validate. Dad wants to talk to me. I'm nervous. I'm afraid of what he's going to say to me. I'm anxious.
Right.
I'm scared. I have a sense of dread. I have all kinds of fears. Okay. Of course I do. Right? He hasn't told me what he wants to say. Usually, let's have a chit chat is not, you know, it's not a good sign. So of course I feel anxious and a bit worried. So that's the validation and the acknowledgement, and then you reassure yourself. But whatever it is, I'm going to be able to handle it. Whatever it is, I've been through this before and I've come out the other side. Whatever it is, I will deal with it. So yes, this uncertainty is scary, but in a few minutes I'm going to know exactly what he has to say, and whatever he has to say, I'm going to be able to deal with it, even if I have to tell him, you know what, I need some time to think about that.
Yeah.
And then you feel better.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so validate how I feel, acknowledge that I'm going to acknowledge my feelings, and then reassure myself, whatever it is, I'll handle it, I'll deal with it, I've dealt with it before, it's going to be fine.
Okay. A lot of times people go right to the reassurance, it'll be fine, which actually is dismissive if you don't have the acknowledgement and the validation beforehand.
Got it. I could try to do that.
I think you can, as Yoda said, try there is not. I think you can do it.
Yeah. And then, like, yesterday I went to go because, you know, I kind of feel like a lot of this food stuff, a lot of things that are eating at me are because I still live at home. So yesterday I went to go look, I looked at some apartments. Everything is just so small and tiny. But I know that.
But it would be yours. It would be.
Mental health. Yeah, I know.
It's a trade-off. I mean, if you want.
At 11 o'clock.
If you want. I mean, you are living in your parents' house. So. Yeah. That means it is not your space in a way. And maybe what you're saying is you want to take ownership of your space, have a say on whether you talk or don't talk at 11 o'clock at night. Because if he calls you, you cannot answer. If he's in the house, you got to go in there. So I think that's great.
Can I do, okay, let's say I had my own space and he texted me like, hey, let's talk. I feel like I would have that same emotion. I would kind of just text him back and be like, hey, Dad, it's late. I'll call you tomorrow. But then I'd still be wondering about what he wants to talk about, what he wants. You know what I mean?
Well, what you can say is, hey, Dad, at a different time, strike while the iron is cold. Say to him, hey, Dad, when you say, hey, let's have a chit chat, or hey, there's something I want to talk to you about, it freaks me out, Dad. It makes me worried. It makes me anxious. I get all nervous. So if you want to talk to me about something, please say, I want to talk to you about this.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, I love that. Love that. Love that, Dr. Nina. Love it. Okay.
Yay.
I'm going to use that.
Okay. Yes.
Thank you so much.
You can set boundaries and expectations of others. And if he says, I don't want to say, then you say, you know, Dad, when you tell me that, all it does is create anxiety in me. You want to create anxiety in me? Just tell me what it is.
I went to him and I was like, okay, so Dad, what do you want to talk about? And then he's like, oh, no, you said you were tired. It doesn't seem like you want to talk. I'm like, yeah, I'm tired. I don't want to talk. But I'm curious as to what you want to talk about. He's like, choosing people. I'm like, Dad, what the hell is choosing people? Do you mean dating? He's like, choosing people. Yeah, it's getting married. I'm like, so you mean dating? Like, this is so frustrating. Anyways, thank you for listening.
And listen to yourself.
Some tools.
And listen to yourself. right? If you are feeling this pressure to find a guy and get married, well, people don't operate well under pressure under those. It's like, it's not like you can be like, okay, I'm going to go on 17 dates a day and then I'm going to get married. I mean, there's only so much you can do. Yeah. So it sounds like the onus is on you. Why haven't you chosen the right person? Instead of,
right.
Hey, you're going about this at your own pace, in your own way, and your way, you want the right person. You don't want a person. I mean, not that your father is saying that, but you want to find the right person.
I know. I actually went to this group last night and the topic was rushing and how people in my specific community like rush to get married and like we're always rushing to become successful, rushing to make money, rushing to be a millionaire, whatever. And she was saying that in terms of like the lady who she's a psychotherapist, but she was saying that like you're only one part of the equation. Like there's another person in the relationship. So it's like you have to be willing and want it. They have to be willing and want it. And then also like there's the universe. That's part of the equation too. It's like if you both want each other, the universe has to keep you both like healthy and alive so that you can like actually commit to each other and continue being together. So that kind of really resonated too. So I just wanted to share that.
And remember that in any relationship, there are three entities. There's you as a whole person, there's the other person as a whole person, and then there's the couple. Mm-hmm. And so many times people rush things and they end up being the us, right? Where they're only the couple and they kind of forget about their individual selves. And sometimes they're too much into their individual selves and not enough into the couple. And sometimes it's all about one person and not about the other person and not about the couple. So keep in mind that you're looking for someone that can balance, that has his own life as you have your own life. And then you're going to have a life together.
Right. Thank you. Yeah, it's not like I've been on so many dates. I've gone out with so many good people. I feel like a lot of people want to go out with me. I'm having trouble finding the person, but the person will show up when the time
is hard.
When the time's right and when I'm ready and when he's ready and it'll happen.
It's hard. It's very hard to find the right person. I went on 100 dates before I met my husband. 100 days. And it was hard. I was like, have I told this story to this person? Or if it was a second date, like, which story did I tell last time? And then I found my husband. He was worth every one of those 100 dates. And by the way, I was his first date online. I was his first online date. I tell him he is incredibly lucky for many reasons. He didn't have to
he
go
did
through.
He did get really lucky.
didn't have to go through all of that.
Away.
Yeah. Yeah. So listen, think about honoring yourself. Okay. Doing what's right for you, being the best Nicole you can be, honoring your needs and wants, and figuring out what's right for you, which may differ from what other people want or expect from you. But you know what? It is your life. You're the only one living it.
Yes. Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. Bye for now.
Bye. 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 Thanks again. Bye.
You're welcome. Bye. So interesting to like kind of go back, and Nicole's been calling for a long, long time, and you could really see the difference between her earlier calls, which were so much body centric, and now she's starting to think about herself as a person, and that is a beautiful thing to see. Okay, so back to the process of change. So first is I'm a food addict. I just have no control, no willpower. Second is I realize now that I was. Something was bothering me and that's why I ate, although at the time I had no idea. Third is, and that's where Nicole called, I know why I want to eat, I'm going to do it anyway. And after that is, I know why I want to eat, but you know what? I'm going to do something different. I'm going to use that very technique. I'm going to talk to myself as if I were a friend. I'm going to support myself. I'm going to encourage myself. I'm going to be totally different to myself. The last one is, and then you don't eat. The last one is, something is bothering me and I'm not even going to think about food. It doesn't even enter your mind. You just, something bothers you and you respond. And that's when food stops being a problem, right? When you directly deal with what is eating at you, when you can identify it and respond to it, you stop using food for that purpose or anything else that's detrimental to your life. So it may seem as if you're in the first or second step or somewhere along there, it may seem as if it is impossible to get to the last step, impossible to get to a point where you're like, I'm not even gonna think about food. It's not even a thought in my mind. Believe me, it is possible. And this is coming from me, who spent years and years and years and years and years and years and more years, where almost my every waking thought was about calories and what I weighed and how much I was eating and what people were thinking if they saw me eating and how much I would weight I would lose or gain at any particular time. And just I was just preoccupied and obsessed with counting calories and food all the time. Couldn't have anything in my house, otherwise I knew I would eat it. So I know it is possible that you can change, because now I don't even think about it. I can have whatever in my house. I don't even think about it. Sometimes I have it, sometimes I don't. It's literally not a thought at all as a way of comforting myself. That is, I am not an anomaly. This is what I teach people to do every day in my private practice, in my online programs, in my new book. So it really is possible to make a radical and total and complete change in your relationship with food. Okay. Now I want to switch gears a little bit. It is still October, midway through October. Can you believe it? How is it midway through October already? Whew, going so fast. So October is Breast Cancer Awareness Month, and I have something important to share, which is my own experience. So, have you ever had one of those dreams where someone is trying to kill you? You don't know who they are or what they want, but they are relentless and they are out to get you, and you're running and you're running and you're running, and it's awful. And then you finally wake up and your heart is pounding and you are so relieved because you realize, oh my gosh, it was just a dream. When I was diagnosed with breast cancer, I felt like I was in that nightmare, but there was no waking up. The diagnosis of cancer really took me to some dark and scary places. My whens became ifs. All the things that I imagined doing in the future suddenly came into question. Would I see my kids grow up? I'm getting teary just thinking about it. Would my husband and I ever go on that African safari? The time that stretched before me turned into a giant question mark. And I also got angry at cancer. Here's the thing. I did everything right. I did everything right. I exercised, I ate right, and not to sound like a Los Angeles stereotype, but at the time I was like gluten-free, dairy-free, and almost never ate any red meat. So what the heck? How was that fair? I did everything right. But cancer does not play fair, as we know. And nobody knows that more than anyone who's experience cancer. And you know, my family and my friends were amazingly supportive. They could not relate, but I want to share with you that I was lucky enough to find a wonderful organization, Immerman Angels, and they match people with any kind of cancer to someone else who has survived that kind of cancer. And they also match caregivers. So if someone you know is struggling with cancer, a loved one, they will match you with someone else who was a loved one of someone struggling. And it was such a relief to connect with someone who truly got it and who offered comfort and hope. And let me tell you, I was so lucky, 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 because that cancer was caught early. And I have heard so many stories. When I was in treatment, the nurses would tell me so many stories of women who felt a lump but were too scared to go to the doctor until it was too late. So I and so many other people are living proof that cancer is not a death sentence. And I had surgery, I had radiation, I did not have to have chemo, thank God. And I am now, when did I have it? 4 years, 4 years ago, 4 years after my diagnosis, I am totally cancer-free. So I want everyone out there to know that they are not alone. There is help, there is support, and most importantly, there is hope. So if you feel a lump or something, don't wait. Don't diagnose yourself with a cyst. Oh, it's probably just a cyst. It's probably nothing. Maybe it is. In fact, probably it is. But let a doctor tell you. Don't be the doctor unless you have a medical degree and, you know, like an MRI thing at home. Like so many things in life, cancer is scary and horrible, but you are not helpless. You can do something. You're not alone. My doctor told me that when he started in 1970, there was only about a 50% survival rate among women with breast cancer across all stages. And now there's something like a 92% survival rate. So if you're listening to this and you've been putting off having a mammogram or you have some weird lump that wasn't there before, please go to the doctor. You can do something. You can get over this. You can be better if it is something at all. And if it's not, you're going to be so relieved. So I just had to say that in honor of Breast Cancer Awareness Month because it's so important. I want that survival rate to go up to 100. This is why I'm doing the Susan J. Komen walk, 60-mile walk for breast cancer in San Diego in a month from today, I think, or a month from yesterday. So it's such an important thing, guys. Believe me, take care of yourself in every way. All right, how are we doing on time? Oh, we have lots of time. All right, I've gotten a question from a lot of people about my new book, The Binge Cure, 7 Steps to Outsmart Emotional Eating, which, by the way, you can get for free. All you have to do is cover shipping and handling at drnina.info, drnina.info. I really want as many people as possible to have this book. You can go on Amazon and you could see it sells for almost $20 on Amazon. You could read the 14 five-star reviews, which make me super happy. Or you can get it on drnina.info for much, much less. Okay, so the 7 steps. So to answer this question, which has come in different forms, what are those 7 steps? So tell me, how do I do the 7 steps? Rather than say, well, just read the book, I'm going to give you sort of an overview of the 7 steps from the book. I'm going to give you a sneak preview. This is my introduction to my book. And I think it will answer the question of people who want to know what the 7 steps are by also telling you a little bit about what they are and giving you some things to do differently. So reading from my book. So I say, let me be very clear. This is not a diet book. You won't have to keep track of food or count calories, carbs, or anything else. You won't find nutritional advice in any of the following chapters. If that's what you're looking for, then stop reading or listening. This isn't the book for you. What you will find is a way to stop binge eating, to lose the obsession and preoccupation with every bite. You'll discover a way to lose weight and keep it off for good. If you're sick and tired of dieting, I'm here to offer a solution. By following the steps outlined in these chapters, you experience what thousands of people in my private practice and online program have experienced, liberation. Liberation. I don't believe in recovery, guys, by the way. I don't believe in recovery. Recovery is, you know, you recover from the flu. You recover from, you know, a bad breakup. That's recovery. Liberation is freedom. Freedom. True liberation is waking up and being at that last step in the process of change, not even thinking about what you're eating. It's not even a thought. Just taking care of yourself, being a friend to yourself, feeling happy more often than not, and not keeping yourself from living your life until you lose X many pounds. We want liberation from all of that. It really is possible to free yourself from a lifetime of dieting and see results. So my patient, who I call Alyssa, all names of patients in this book have been changed for confidentiality reasons. She is a good example of this. Alyssa stopped binging, lost weight, and kept it off without ever counting a single, I can't read today. Okay. Regrouping. Alyssa stopped binging, lost weight, and kept it off without ever counting a single calorie, carb, or fat gram. At first, she was skeptical about my approach, which was different from anything she'd tried before. And during our initial consultation, she told me she'd tried everything, every diet, every workout, everything short of surgery. She figured she had nothing left to lose by giving my non-dieting approach a try. That first session took place on a hot, sticky, and uncomfortable summer day. Alyssa showed up wearing dark jeans and a long-sleeved sweatshirt. She said, I thought about wearing shorts, but honestly, I'd rather have heat stroke than let anyone see my legs. Alyssa chose camouflage over comfort, dressing to hide her body from others. She worried about her health as well as her appearance and often struggled with depression and anxiety about her weight. She feared her situation was hopeless and no one could help her. I feel so stuck, she said. Every other part of my life is pretty good, but my binge eating keeps getting worse. I can't believe how much weight I've gained. How do I get over this terrible eating problem? If you can relate, you may think you have an eating problem, or you know someone who does. And I can assure you with absolute certainty that you do not have an eating problem. This may sound controversial, but in fact, there is no such thing as an eating problem. Weight loss diets focus on what you're eating, but not why. Diets don't address the underlying issues, the underlying reasons that you turn to food in the first place. So imagine you have a garden in your backyard. Every day you visit that garden and you see that weeds have popped up among your plants and your flowers. You pull out the weeds, but what happens? When you don't get the roots, the garden looks great for a while, but then the weeds grow back and you have to start all over. So diets are like weeds, and you've likely pulled out weed after weed to resolve your weight problems. And for a while, it worked. You lost weight. You started to feel better. And then you found yourself right back where you started, binging, dieting, and obsessing in front of the mirror. You feel out of control, and you hate the way you look. And here's where you have to have compassion for yourself and understand why it's been so hard to create lasting change. After all, you cannot solve a problem you can't see. The reason you're still struggling is this. You haven't gotten to the root of why you eat, binge, or constantly diet. You haven't accessed those parts because you didn't know they were there. Those roots are outside your awareness, deep in your unconscious, hidden from you. Oops. The key to permanent change is finding those roots and pulling them out. And that is where I come in. So in these 7 steps in the book, I teach you how to look inside yourself and identify your binge triggers. Then I show you how to make sustainable, permanent changes. So getting back to Alyssa, her main problem was that she could not stop binging at night. And she was busy all day. Her relationship with food was okay, but nights were a completely different story. She ate a normal dinner, and then even though she wasn't hungry, she always found herself snacking after dinner, and she kept eating even when she was so full that her stomach hurt. I helped Alyssa realize that this was a way of converting emotional pain to physical pain. While she was at work, she wasn't thinking about what was bothering her. She was busy, and when she was home with her thoughts, she would feel restless and upset, and she would turn to food for distraction. She had no idea how to soothe herself without food. When she identified and worked through what was bothering her, she stopped binging and she lost weight. And I'll tell you more about how she did that in just a little bit. So one way of getting rid of those underlying conflicts is to be in psychoanalysis or psychoanalytic psychotherapy. And in today's fast-paced and hectic world, many people don't have the time or resources to commit to such an undertaking, and nor does everyone have access to psychoanalytic treatment. So I wrote this book so you can manage the problem yourself. Like Alyssa, you really can stop binging, lose weight, and gain health, all without ever going on another diet. So 7 steps. So in the first chapter, which is the first step, we dig deep into the science and psychology of why diets actually make you gain weight. Yes, diets make you gain weight. The truth is, dieting is bad for your health. Body positivity activist Taryn Brumfitt says, I never trust a 4-letter word where the first 3 letters spell die. Well said. Diets destroy your ability to eat intuitively, and they compromise your metabolism. Diets kill your mood, spirit, sense of enjoyment, and self-image. When you're on a diet, you're focused on what you should eat or not eat instead of listening to your body and eating intuitively. you might be surprised to learn of growing evidence that diets do more harm than good when it comes to weight loss. Next, which is second step, we'll crack the code of emotional eating, paying special attention to the hidden emotions and situations that are the biggest triggers. It's impossible to fight an invisible army. As long as what's going on inside remains out of awareness, you just get beaten up by a hidden force, and you don't know why. Only by recognizing what's truly taking place inside, in your head and your heart, and making that army visible, can you see what's really happening. And then you can fight back and win. Like most people, you're probably familiar with the concept of emotional eating. And we are going well beyond this concept, but it is our starting point. So a huge part of what makes us human is our ability to feel a range of emotions. Yet there are so many injunctions against recognizing, sharing, and expressing those feelings. We can't ignore our emotions. We can't stuff them down, work them away, gamble them away, or positive think them away. As counterintuitive as it may seem, the only way to get rid of feelings is to actually express them. And I give some actionable strategies to do exactly that in that chapter. We're also going to launch a counterattack against many of the ideas you have about food. These days, it seems that eating is considered almost a criminal act. If you think that sounds dramatic, consider these common expressions, and maybe you've even said something like this. I was so bad last night. I was so bad. I ate pizza. I want fried chicken, but I've been so good today. I don't want to ruin it. I can't eat dessert in front of my friends. They will judge me. Does that sound familiar? Any of it? Remotely? I'm sure it does, because for many of us, eating bad foods equates to being bad or feeling bad about ourselves. And the reverse is true. The idea that eating healthy foods means we're being good. Either way, what we eat is then connected to our characters. And that is simply not true. I mean, think about it. Your goodness or worthiness isn't tied to what you choose to put in your mouth. And together, we're going to change those ideas. The next step is to make peace with yourself. And in that section of the book, you take back your power from the mirror and the bathroom scale. And I'm going to show you how to nurture a healthy relationship with yourself by turning your inner critic into a friend. And by the way, one of the things I talk about is what I shared with Nicole earlier, the VERY acronym. You know, when you validate, acknowledge, and then reassure yourself. So V is validate, A is acknowledge, R is reassure, Y is yourself. When you do that, that's how you comfort yourself. It really should be actually AVRY, but that doesn't really make a word. So VERY is easy to remember. So sort of validate and acknowledgement go hand in hand. You say, you know, acknowledge, yes, I feel this. Of course I feel this. Of course I feel upset. Who wouldn't feel upset in this situation? And it doesn't matter if someone else would or wouldn't. I do. I feel upset. And I'm going to validate the fact that that is valuable and worthy, and it needs my attention, not my condemnation. I need to pay attention to what I'm feeling. How would you treat a friend, by the way, who is upset? Would you just say, oh, you shouldn't be upset? So many of us talk to ourselves differently from how we talk to other people. So when you acknowledge and validate and then reassure yourself, that is a way of comforting yourself with words instead of escaping yourself with food. In this step, you also get to know your needs. In addition to having basic needs for food, water, and shelter, we all need love, affection, connection, attention, a sense of purpose or meaningfulness in our lives. And if those needs aren't met or are inconsistently met, we feel needy. And we turn to food as a way to meet those needs at times. And I talk about that at length in that chapter. And so in that part of the book, I give you new ways to respond to yourself, like VERY, but a lot of other things, other than use food for comfort or distraction. And then we're going to look at your relationship to food and to other people. So the next step. I have a sign in my office that says, sometimes when I open my mouth, my mother comes out. Alyssa, for example, getting back to Alyssa, she was raised by highly critical parents who were never satisfied with her performance in school or in sports. When Alyssa got a report card with 5 A grades and 1 B, they scolded her for the B. When she got 100% on a test, they wanted to know why she hadn't earned extra credit. When she set a personal record in track, they predicted that she would do even better next time. When she went to a Big Ten college, they were disappointed that she didn't attend an Ivy League school. Alyssa wished her parents could appreciate what she did well instead of focusing on what she didn't do. When Alyssa bought a new home, she immediately criticized herself for not being able to afford a more expensive place. When she made partner at her law firm, she wondered why she hadn't done so earlier. No matter what she accomplished, it was never good enough. So as you can see, Alyssa related to the accomplishments and achievements in her current life in exactly the way her parents had during her childhood. So people often ask me, is it always about the past? Why can't we just deal with what's going on right now? The past is past. Well, our task in this part of the book is actually to put the past in the past, just as Alyssa did when she realized that she was repeating the worst moments of her childhood on a daily basis and instead began to treat herself with more appreciation and respect. And let me be very clear, this is not about blaming parents. It's about explaining why you learn to cope by eating. It's in the service of creating something new. Once you achieve that, unless you have the kind of abusive parents who deserve to be blamed, in which case, you know, it is both blame and explain, because abuse needs to be acknowledged and recognized, and it is not acceptable, whether it is emotional, physical, or any kind of abuse. So once you kind of put the past in the past, or start learning how the past is haunting your present, and you know, oh, now I see the invisible army. It's the army from the past. Bam, and you can fight it. Then the goal is to be fully in the present, which is the next step, and find new strategies to relate to yourself in the present. So in Alyssa's situation, the roots of her relationship with food went deep. She never felt as if she was good enough, for obvious reasons, and she had terrible self-esteem. And so her lifelong solution to feeling bad was to eat for comfort. And then she got upset with herself for eating, and it was just a cycle of, you know, dieting, binging, feeling bad. Alyssa knew she was a good person, but somehow she didn't feel good enough. And she was sure that other people viewed her the way she saw herself. When she changed her perspective by challenging the assumptions she always took as truisms, she stopped eating for comfort and distraction and lost weight. And the last time I saw her, remember the first time I saw her on a very hot day, she was wearing jeans and a sweatshirt. The last time I saw her, she was wearing a lovely summer dress, no longer hiding her legs. So our minds are incredibly adept at protecting ourselves from unpleasant or upsetting emotions. We often become so good at avoiding what's bothering us that we don't even know we're triggered. If you're turning to food and you don't understand why, it is not because you're addicted to food or have no willpower. It's because your mind has found a way to protect you. And those modes of protection include turning against yourself, mind reading, slave driving, and minimizing. And we explore all of those in that step, in that chapter. And then I teach you how to replace eating for distraction with new and effective ways of coping. Now, if you have ever lost weight and then sabotaged your progress, you are not alone. Lots of people get close to their goal weight and suddenly start making bad food choices or letting their gym memberships lapse. So we're going to work together in that chapter so that when you start losing weight, you stop the sabotage and stay on track. And that is when the weight starts coming off naturally and, even more importantly, stays off. And keep in mind that change is always a process. No one ever sits at a piano for the first time and plays a Tchaikovsky concerto right away. First, you have to identify the piano keys. You've got to learn the chords, and you've got to practice and practice some more. And you keep practicing until one day you sit down at the piano and you're not thinking, you're just playing effortlessly. And there is a similar sequence to stop binging, to stop emotional and stress eating, stop the yo-yo diet cycle. Following the steps in this book helps you create a healthier, happier relationship to food for good. So if you have any questions about any of this, we're doing on time, please give me a call. I would love to hear, as I said, about, you know, what's on your mind, what you are struggling with. I'm actually going to put my page on right now, which I just realized I didn't have on. If you have any questions, either call me or shoot me a question. Let me know what you are thinking about. Nobody is asking a question. Okay, then I'm going to randomly turn to a page. Oh, okay. I'm going to randomly turn to a page and share this with you. Those of you who are longtime listeners over the 2.5 years I've been on the air have heard this before, but you know what? These are things you need to hear over and over and over again. Because change is not the Oprah aha moment. I love Oprah. I love Oprah. I adore Oprah. But she really needs to talk to me. And her aha moment has done a lot of harm for people because they think, I mean, she didn't realize this was going to happen, but they think that when you have the aha moment, oh my God, I realize that. I get it. I get why I do that. That suddenly all the dominoes are going to fall into place. And that is not what happens. That's the start of fighting back the army. That's the start of change. That is not the end of, that is not change. Insight is not immediate change. Insight is, okay, now you know what you're dealing with. Now you need to practice. It's like saying, oh, I know what each finger goes on the piano. Now I can play. No. You know where each finger goes on the piano, but that doesn't mean you can play. You need to practice. So I turn to the word should. This is in the step 3, make peace with food and yourself. So this is about cleaning up your vocabulary. The words you should not say to yourself, even though I just said it. The words you ought not say to yourself if you want to feel good. One of them is should. Should. Should is a terrible word. How often do you find yourself using the word should, especially if it comes to food or your eating habits? I bet if you counted how many times you thought or said this word with regard to yourself, you would be surprised. Maybe you often find yourself thinking one of the following thoughts. I should not do that. I shouldn't have eaten that. I shouldn't eat that. I shouldn't want that. I should be better at this. I should get a better job. I should have a boyfriend or a girlfriend. As a professor of mine used to say, don't should on yourself. The word should causes us to direct anxiety, sadness, anger, and distress towards ourselves. And these feelings may be so powerful that we use food to cope. We make ourselves feel bad, and then you can't simultaneously make yourself feel better when you're making yourself feel bad. So, boom, you escape yourself with food. Eating or binging or stress eating or all of those things, it is really, it's a solution to the problem, but it is really an abandonment. It's a solution in that you deal with whatever's upsetting you in the moment, but it is an abandonment of yourself. And when you're shoulding on yourself, you're just making yourself feel bad. You're just criticizing yourself, essentially. And that is... That's a terrible way to feel all the time. No wonder you use food, because you get away from that mean voice. So instead of shooting on yourself, be curious. Be curious. Because the more you ask questions, the more likely you are to find answers. And that is why I often say to people, be curious, not critical. Critical sounds like, you know, I shouldn't have eaten that. Criticism disguised as curiosity. Why did I eat that? Why did I eat that? Oh my God. What's wrong with me? Okay, that's not curiosity. That's criticism disguised as a question. Curious sounds like, why did I eat that? What's going on with me? Why did I have that? What's going on with me that I'm using that food for comfort? What am I hoping for? What am I getting from it? What am I feeling? What am I thinking? What's happening? Am I filling an inner void? Am I feeling alone and symbolically filling up loneliness? Am I expressing anger? Am I just distracting myself? What's going on with me? When you ask the question that way, and notice my tone, there's a big difference between saying, what's going on with me? Why did I eat that? That is not conducive to feeling better or getting answers. But saying, with real curiosity and care, what's going on with me? Right? Not what are you doing, but why? And the more that you practice that, the better you get. Just like playing the piano or doing anything that you need to learn, you get better and better with practice. So practice curiosity and start finding those answers, and let me know what was helpful about this show today, what you want to know more of, any questions you have. I am happy to answer them. Thank you so much for joining me here today on the Dr. Nina Show on LA Talk Radio. Again, if you want to buy the book, you don't have to buy it. You can get it for free at drnina.info. And I'd love for you to read it, and I'd love for you to get the inspiration and motivation in these pages, as well as the knowledge, and to really heal your relationship to yourself and thus to food. It is possible. Again, you can listen live here every Wednesday at 10, or listen later at Apple Podcasts or anywhere you get your podcasts. Thanks so much for joining me here today. I'll see you next week.
You're listening to The Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle-Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.